and welcome once again to The Blueprint. This is Canada's Conservative Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Schmale, Member of Parliament for Halliburton, Kawartha Lakes, Brock, with new content every single Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We do thank you for being here today. Of course, if you can't watch or listen to the whole program right this second, you can download it later on platforms like CastBox, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, you name it. It is out there. Also, we ask that you like, comment, subscribe, share this program, help us push back against the ever-moving liberal agenda. And maybe there is someone within your social media network that might be open to hearing the conservative message that they're not getting from the mainstream message media. This is your chance to do that and our chance to ensure that Erin O'Toole is the next Prime Minister of Canada. Joining me today, another great show, a friend of the program. She's been on before, Raquel Dancho. She's the Member of Parliament for Kildonan St. Paul. She's also the Shadow Minister for Future Workforce Development and Disability Inclusion. We welcome her to the show. And I think you were the first guest ever on the podcast when we started. I don't even know how long ago.
You know, I was. Yeah, we were in, that was when we could gather in groups and we were meeting in a boardroom, I think. And there was myself, I think Eric Melillo might have been there. And it was sort of, yeah, it was right when we got elected after the 2019 election. So that would have been probably a year and a half ago. It feels like a decade ago through what we've been through lately. And you've had tremendous success on your podcast. It's one of my favorites. I'm an avid podcast listener. So yeah, thank you so much for all the work you're doing on this. It's fantastic.
With all these compliments, you can keep coming on with that. So when you came on the first time, we talked about young people getting involved in politics. Of course, you and Eric are some of the youngest members of our caucus, but also the parliament in general, this parliament. But now we're going to talk to you about the COVID pandemic and how parents have been trying to navigate this whole thing, you know, with doing their work, in many cases, homeschooling their children and a whole bunch of other things. But another thing that has popped up is the issue around employment insurance benefits for those women that are about to or going on maternity leave. Maybe you can tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so just very simply, Jamie, essentially what we're seeing across the country is that women have been laid off. Obviously, we know women have been laid off to a greater degree than men. They often work in the industries most impacted. But we've seen a lot of closures, downsizing, restructuring of hours for employees. So a lot of women have been laid off. And so when they've been laid off, they'll go on their EI, which they've paid into for decades, many of them. And but what happens with EI is you're only allowed to really get 50 weeks of EI at a time, which coincidentally is the amount of weeks that you get from EI when you give birth to a baby or adopt a baby or what have you. When you go on maternity leave, you get your 50 weeks as well. And so what's been happening with many of these women, they've been laid off, have not been able to find a job. They've gotten pregnant while laid off and sort of as they're using their full 50 weeks, they're approaching their 50 weeks that they've been using on EI. And so now they're going to go give birth, but they've used up all their 50 weeks. So we have women that are having to go find a job or go without a second income in their home only 4 weeks after giving birth. So it's unbelievable of a problem. It's in Canada, of course, Jamie, as you know, that year of maternity leave for moms is sacrosanct. It's part of our Canadian really identity, I think, for moms. It's something so special to all the moms I know. And yet we're seeing women being laid off. So they're from no fault of their own. They're using their EI and then they're going to be giving birth and they'll have no EI left for their 50 weeks of maternity leave. So that's really the problem in a nutshell.
Now, you and others in our caucus have been talking about this for quite some time. This isn't the first time. It's actually quite surprising. No. The government has not reacted to this because they always talk about being the feminist government, which we know they're fake feminists. But they keep, you'd think this would be just such an easy one to fix because it affects so many people.
Well, really, and this is mothers, and you're right, this is the second time that this has happened since the pandemic began. So on the early outsets of the pandemic, when women either, there was no CERB, remember there was no CERB for that first week or two. So people were going on to EI and then CERB came. So women who were imminently going to give birth and imminently going on their maternity leave or within a couple months, the Liberal government sort of told them in the onset of the pandemic, oh, just go on your maternity leave early, just a couple months early, you know, take it off the top, no problem. And then obviously there was an outcry. Many of our MPs did a lot of work on that to reverse that decision. We successfully lobbied the government to treat pregnant women and women who've just had babies fairly. And so we put a stop to that and solved that issue. And now here we are again, fighting a very similar battle. And the most frustrating thing about this, Jamie, is yes, the hypocrisy. This is a government that consistently says it's feminist, it puts everything through feminist lens, and yet they consistently forget about pregnant women. Consistently. This is the second time in the same pandemic that they've left them behind. And I just find it very infuriating that they get all these nice headlines, all of this sort of credit from the mainstream media. And yet, again, here we are, pregnant women are in dire straits. Like I met with these women. I had a roundtable a couple weeks ago with them right around Mother's Day. And there was half a dozen of them or so. And actually one of the husbands was there as well, advocating for his wife. And they said it really well. They said, look, parents are under tremendous stress this year, obviously with COVID, homeschooling. It's been a disaster for so many people. And now pregnant women that are imminently pregnant are having to go out there. One woman was saying she's having pregnancy sickness and things like that. And she's having to go to work just because she's so desperate to rebuild her EI hours so that maybe she'll get some EI maternity leave for her baby. So we're having sick pregnant women go into work during a pandemic, desperately trying to get their hours so they can get time with their newborn babies and that they can physically recover from the ordeal that is giving birth. And yet the Trudeau Liberals are just kind of ignoring it and saying, no, no, we're making historic investments in women. Like, you don't know what you're talking about, Conservatives. Well, no, I talked to these women myself and they're desperately stressed with reason and they're not being listened to. And it's, I just find it a grave embarrassment and disappointment from this Liberal government. Yet another one in this last 14 difficult months.
Yeah, it's definitely a long list. And when you look at the budget, 700 pages for crying out loud of spending on basically everything and everyone they can find, except there are actual cases that we have that people need help. They need assistance and the government isn't responding, but yet they're committing all this other spending. They're couching all this extra spending in COVID relief when much of it doesn't have anything to do with COVID relief. And you think about healthcare, long-term care facilities. This is what the pandemic was largely about, aside from the wage subsidy, the business loans, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But healthcare spending did not go up any significant amount above their 3%. But yet they came up with all these new programs to start spending on that, again, will probably be a disaster going forward.
Yeah, you would think that given all the shortcomings, and again, we have an incredible healthcare system in so many ways. We know Canadians adore our healthcare system, but there have been shortcomings in this pandemic. And we know that the wait times are normally in a public healthcare system incredibly long and at an embarrassing level in Manitoba before the PC government took over. We had the longest wait times in Canada, 8 hours. Was often the average of going to an ER was embarrassing. They've made some progress there, but now we're seeing limits on our ICU capacity. And it's been 14 months that we're dealing with this and we're still within these limits. And we're seeing other countries with greater ICU capacity doing better. So why is it that the Liberal government in the worst health crisis in a century failed to increase healthcare transfers to provinces so that we could better equip ourselves for a fourth wave, a fifth wave, pandemic number two? Who knows? It's just so irresponsible that they continue to say, oh, we'll spend whatever it takes for as long as it takes. And yet they're failing to tell Canadians that we're going to spend that they when they say that they're saying, oh, we're going to spend however much we want on whatever we want for as long as we want. That's really what they're saying.
So what comes to mind to me is the daycare commitment they've made. But, and again, they've made it since 1993. So this is coming along yet again, couching it in COVID relief, right? In COVID to come up with another project that they need to get 50% cost sharing agreements with the provinces. I don't know about you. You're from Manitoba. I'm from Ontario. My province isn't bursting with cash right now. I don't think yours is either. I don't know a province that is. Let alone the massive gaps that this program will have, particularly around access, cost, and flexibility, all of which people I think need in this day and age where workplace access and the jobs are changing. You need flexibility and you need choice and you need competition, all of which will start to eviscerate this with a government program.
Oh, completely. You're bang on there, Jamie. And I find it actually insulting to the women's intelligence in Canada to say, oh, the Liberals and Chrystia Freeland are saying, oh, well, we'll recover this she session with our $30 billion childcare announcement. We all know that if we ever see even one childcare space from this announcement, it's going to be years down the line. There's going to be so much provincial and even municipal wrangling to get these childcare spaces built. We're seeing provinces, as you mentioned, struggle. And this is a provincial area of jurisdiction, yet they're struggling to build these government-run childcare centers. It's moving at a glacial pace. I know in Manitoba, we have, I think, 12,000 people on a wait list, or we did about 5 years ago, after 17 years of socialist government in Manitoba. Even though, again, they want everything to be run by the government, the childcare system was in dire straits. I worked on the file. One of my jobs was to sort of look at how we can cut down red tape for opening childcare centers, whether that's home-based in the neighborhood or publicly run or privately run. Let's just look at why we aren't able to build these. And I printed off all the red tape regulation to open up a home-based daycare, and it was about 2 to 3 feet high. And so Chrystia Freeland's announcement does absolutely nothing, zero, to address that problem. And yet that is a part of, as you mentioned, part of the root of the problem for why we can't open childcare spaces. Too regulated, too haphazard from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. And again, I would love to talk more about the choice factor. I mean, there was a really interesting announcement that's coming out today from the Association of Daycare Operators in Ontario. And I'll just read their quote to you. Regarding Chrystia Freeland's $30 billion childcare announcement, they said it would result in uncertainty, limited access, the loss of jobs, and the closure of many women-owned small businesses. And because we know many women open a five-person childcare center in their basement when they're raising their own babies. I went to these childcare centers in the neighbor's home when I was a kid. I turned out just fine. In fact, turned out pretty great. I know a lot of other kids who did as well. And just shows what we can do as a community and as women to support each other at this childcare level. And yet Chrystia Freeland is looking to steal away that choice for mothers. And no one is really talking about that except for us, of course. We're banging on that drum. I know women my age, all of them are having children. I haven't heard one of them say, gosh, I wish there was more government-run daycare. They say, no, I wish I had more flexibility and choice in my childcare. And I wish maybe I could work a little bit more part-time those first couple of years. A lot of women say that. And yet that's nowhere in Chrystia Freeland's announcement. She's saying, no, women got to go work full-time right after they have a baby. And it's got to be at government-run daycare centers. That's the solution to women's economic woes.
As long as they approve of it.
That's right.
And they don't really provide it. They basically assign it because you don't really have your choice. You get what you're given, whether you like it or not, whether it works for you or not, whether it is actually benefiting you or not. You just get assigned and you're forced to basically take it. You're right about the competition part of it. We do recognize that childcare is an issue, and you just spoke to the amount of red tape in Manitoba that prevented childcare spaces from being created outside the government system. And yet the government says there's a problem with this certain industry. Then they start meddling. The price goes up and they say, well, the price is going up. Then they start meddling more and the price keeps going up. And they don't actually fix the problem, which is reducing red tape regulations to a reasonable level and keeping taxes at a reasonable level. So the jobs are created. The market fills the gap.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of parents who would love to have a sort of reliable 9-to-5 childcare system that's, you know, run and regulated by the government. Don't get me wrong. In Manitoba, they're actually opening up more right in schools. That's an innovative solution.
But again, that's choice.
That's choice. And that's led by the provinces who have the provincial jurisdiction over that. So that's great to see some innovation from the PC government here in Manitoba. I love it. But you're right. I mean, we're seeing in Quebec, and talking to our Quebec conservative colleagues, they're saying there's, 6,000 or more. It was a shocking number of the spaces that we've lost in Quebec during the pandemic. And that's this sort of model that Chrystia Freeland is in love with, that she's saying we're going to expand to all of Canada. And yet it's under tremendous strain under the COVID pandemic restrictions. And I toured all of the daycare centers, or most of them, in my riding last summer, just to kind of see how they were handling all of these problems. And they were in much reduced capacity because, of course, they couldn't have as much students around. They were relegating like 2-year-olds to little taped in areas because they had such a large amount of kids that were coming every day. They had to keep them away from each other. So there are a lot of problems in these large government-run childcare centers, during a pandemic, which is when we need reliability and flexibility. So they're a great solution for a lot of parents, but they're certainly not the holy grail that Chrystia Freeland keeps talking about.
All right. We only have a little bit longer, so I do want to switch topics here just for a quick second. Sure. Let's talk about the wage subsidy. You have been in the news lately talking about the wage subsidy. You uncovered something that is quite shocking, I think, to most people. Let's unwrap this. I will let you do it because it was your hard work and that of your team.
Oh gosh, I can't take any credit for it. It was actually, I think it was the Globe and Mail, or was it the National? I should remember this now, but it was from one of the news journalists that broke the story. But I did bring it up in the House of Commons. So I'll take a little bit of credit for that, I suppose, but it wasn't our hard work. But we certainly wanted to communicate on it because this is exactly what the Conservatives have been talking about for 14 months, and that's government waste. Yes, we know, as you've said, I've said this, governments are the ones that shut down part of our economy. So yes, governments have the responsibility on behalf of the taxpayer, particularly the future taxpayer, to bail them out. We understand that. But the Liberal government is walking around thinking that it had a blank check to do whatever it wanted, and it continues to say that. They'll do as much as it takes for as long as it takes, or however much it takes for as long as it takes. And yet now, Jamie, it's getting really interesting because it's been 14 months, 15 months, and now we're starting to uncover a lot of this sort of corruption and the overspending and the misuse of taxpayer dollars and the blatant disrespect and disregard for the hard-earned money from Canadian taxpayers that the Liberals are spending like it's going out of style. So what happened with the wage subsidy, as you know, it was put in place to sort of subsidize part of the wage for particularly small and medium-sized enterprises, small or community small businesses that were partially shut down or impacted by the shutdown. So some of their wages would be subsidized. What we're finding now is that billion-dollar hedge funds that were doing fantastic also got the wage subsidy. So there was this one, there's dozens of them that we're finding out, but one in particular really stood out. They earned $100 million of dividends and benefits for their shareholders and their executives last year. And they also took about $3 million from the Canadian taxpayer for a wage subsidy. And there is just line after line after line of wealthy, wealthy hedge funds. Some of the best performing hedge funds in Canada received the wage subsidy last year, a gross misuse and disrespect of taxpayer dollars, Jamie. And when I asked her about it, she said, oh, no, we've saved 5.3 million jobs with the wage subsidy. Well, great. Conservatives, we supported the wage subsidy, but we did not support the wage subsidy going to hedge funds and billionaires. That's irresponsible and disrespectful, in my opinion.
But don't forget, this Liberal government, their badge of success is how much they spend. Not whether or not a program is successful or not, or achieves the outcomes they want it to. It's the price tag. And of course, it's taxpayer money. Government doesn't have anything that it must first confiscate from the people. And this massive spending will have to be paid back by future generations. We've already seen very scary stats that show the cost of servicing the debt is going to far outpace what we're paying for the childcare benefit transfers or many other government programs. This is going to be a very big problem. And especially when interest rates rise, which they will, this will cause a whole shift on how government does business.
Oh, there's a world of pain coming for middle-class Canadians. We're middle-class Canada, which is most Canadians, is going to be the ones that are going to be just squeezed beyond belief from my perspective, from every little tax hikes, the Liberals and provincial governments, you know, they have to figure this out too, right? They're no fault of their own. The Liberals let this virus into Canada and it led to destruction. So all levels of government are going to be looking to recoup that money. This isn't some sort of fringe opinion. They've spent more than, you know, really ever since the Second World War. They're going to have to raise revenues and they're going to have to raise taxes to do that. So it's coming. And now we're finding out where they've misspent. And it's just the beginning. I think this is the tip of the iceberg that we're finding out, or journalists are finding out, opposition members are researching and finding out what they've misused our money on. And it's just going to be a world of pain. And to think for them to arrogantly say, oh, we'll spend whatever it takes for as long as it takes. Well, maybe you shouldn't. Maybe you should be looking at ways that you can conserve money. I mean, has Chrystia Freeland had one conversation with a bureaucrat about, how could we trim this a little bit? I doubt it. And we're going to be the ones to pay for it. And our constituents are going to be the ones that have less money at the end of the month to give to their families because of it. And she's just kind of getting off scot-free. So far, but we'll see.
So far. Well, we'll see if we can rein that in. But again, it's just more time, more patience and more money. And eventually they will figure it out. And that is the whole problem with this. Their daycare program, along with many other pet projects that they are funding in this COVID relief package, some of it is locked in and permanent, meaning you can't really get rid of it without some significant waves. And that is the big problem going forward.
And I know Chrystia Freeland in her mandate letter when she became Canada's first female finance minister, big moment for a lot of women. And I completely understand that. But in that mandate letter, she was said to not create any permanent spending programs. And it's as if that never happened. I suppose that was just put in something to, you know, satisfy maybe conservative leaning news. If they're, you know, I don't know why Trudeau would have put that in if he had no intention of ensuring that she abided by that commitment. And if Trudeau himself is the one saying, hey, in this mandate letter, hey, maybe we shouldn't do long-term spending commitments. And yet they're not even meeting that low bar. I, you know, as a woman, I'm happy to see a finance minister in there, but really, I mean, she brought forward the largest spending budget in Canadian history and a pie in the sky, $30 billion childcare utopian dream. Those are the signatures from our first female finance minister. I mean, I'm kind of disappointed, to say the least, Jamie. I mean, come on, you're making the ladies look bad.
Well, we do have to run. I do want to continue the conversation, but I do give our guests the final word. Raquel, it's all you.
Oh, well, I just want to let your listeners know that the Conservative team is united. We are working incredibly hard. We're making gains in the polls. We're seeing that gap between Liberals and Conservatives shorten, which is just fantastic news. What we're doing is working. We're appealing to more voters than ever before. That's the plan. And it's through efforts like Jamie Schmale's Blueprint podcast that we're able to get the word out. So please share this podcast. Please follow Jamie on all social media. You can reach me as well on social media. We are working tremendously hard day and night, your Conservative MPs, to turn the ship around, get the Trudeau Liberal Champagne Socialists out of power and ensure there's some competency restored in Ottawa once again so we can, you know, really commit to making Canada of tomorrow better than the Canada of today. That's our plan and we're going to deliver on it.
Well, I know if I ever quit this program being host, I know who the next host will be. I couldn't have said it better myself. Raquel Danjo, great to have you on the show. Member of Parliament from Kildonan, St. Paul, also the Shadow Minister for Future Workforce Development and Disability Inclusion. Always a pleasure. We will have you on again. That just flew by. So for you, we do appreciate you coming on, listening to us. New content every single Tuesday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. As Raquel said, please like, subscribe, comment, share this program. Help us push back against that ever-moving Liberal agenda. There's someone we know in your social media network that might be open to hearing this message. We do appreciate your help. That will ensure that Justin Trudeau gets voted out, Erin O'Toole gets voted in, and the Conservative government comes and cleans up this mess that has happened in Ottawa. Of course, if you can't watch this all now, listen to it, download it, platforms like CastBox, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, you name it, it is out there. Thank you so much for joining us. Of course, as always, remember, low taxes, less government, more freedom. That is the